Welcome back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, and my very special guest, Jason Verbelli, from Southern California at this particular moment, bathed in the Fukushima radiation as well with all the aborted fetuses. Now, we have the caller lines open. Sorry, it was a bit of a horrendous aborted fetuses joke. I don't know where it comes in. 218-339-8525, ladies and gentlemen. 218-339-8525 if you actually want to join the conversation. If you have some insights or some questions and things of that nature, the number is 218-339-8525. If you're dialing from outside the United States, you just put a 1 on the front there. So it's like 1218-339-8525. Okay. Back to Mr. Verbelli. And I was wondering as well, what actually kind of got you into this? When did you first discover all of these things? And I mean, did you used to be like an upstanding citizen, you know, going to your slave job and saying, yes, sir, no, sir, 3 bags full of weed, sir, and doing all that stuff? Or have you always been just kind of like, you know, frack that?
Yeah, the latter, frack that. When I was a little kid, I had these like little magnets set up. There was a bunch of things that got me thinking about this. One of the things was I was playing with magnets as a little kid, and there was a bunch of people over at the house at the time, and I was pushing the magnets even though they wanted to repel, you know, moving them, just feeling the force. Thought it was the most amazing, sacred, spectacular thing I had ever encountered in life. It is, and it still is. So I go to approach some of the guests at the house at the time. Look at this. Do you see this? You see that? And they said, yeah, that's it's just magnets. Great. Excuse me? It's just magnets? Hello? Come here. Give me your collar. Come here. Like, just magnets? No, that was like a huge insult to me. And the people who couldn't see the significance in something that I put in such high regard really not hurt my feelings, but sort of disgusted me in science. Because something that special, they couldn't see the significance of it. So I knew there was something really, really important about that. If all these people couldn't see it, and I'm feeling it, and that's just magnets, there's something going on here. So a few years later, you know, I'm listening to Science Channel, doing whatever, and somebody mentioned the term black hole. Ooh, it's a dirty word. So I'm looking up, what is it? I'm asking my parents, what is this thing? And they're trying to tell me the classic definition. Oh, yeah, it's this thing. It sucks in mass so much that it traps in light. Nothing can escape. I'm like, okay, but what is it? I said, well, you're going to have to ask somebody else. I'm like, all right. So I went and asked somebody else. They couldn't tell me. So the more people that I asked, the more people I realized had no freaking clue what it was. So,
you know, that definition of the black hole is not entirely dissimilar from the definition I'd give television. You know, it sucks everybody in. No light can come out of it. Nobody can escape from it.
Yeah, like it's Fox News or something, you know?
Yeah. The Fox News black hole.
But, like, that's, you know, what I was saying. If I had a school and a kid were to use the phrase black hole, I'd give him detention for using profanity. Because it is just the most fallacious, absurd concept. It's ridiculous. Now, there is a guy named Stephen Crothers who recently has a video on YouTube with the Electric Universe. Again, YouTube user Thunderbolts Project. You can see this brilliant guy, Stephen Crothers, talking about the misconceptions of Einstein, of what they call black holes. Look, there's just as much of a black hole in the center of a donut that you eat as there is in the center of a galaxy, or a tornado, or hurricane, or whirlpool, or vortex on any scale. See that?
Yeah.
Is there a black hole in there? No. There's the absence of matter in the center of that. There's no mass in the center of the donut. It's literally a hole. And since space is black and you're seeing through a hole, it's not like they're saying. It's not a point of matter so dense that it's trapping in all the stuff. So another thing that got me thinking about this is Walter Russell's quote that says, light does not travel. Wait a minute. When Einstein talking about the speed of light, we can plainly measure the speed of light coming from this to that. No, you're measuring an electric wave travel. And when that electric wave hits something, the heat and light is produced on the surface of whatever that wave hits. Not that the heat and light travel from here to here, but the electric waves travel. And then when they are put in a state of chaos, you feel that difference in chaos as temperature, heat, light. But those waves aren't traveling, as they say. Light can't be sucked in. Light is the absence of motion, as Walter Russell put it. It's stillness, which is a completely different perspective of the universe than what Einstein and mainstream science is talking about. There are misconceptions to address, and there are some really brilliant people who have offered data, pages, and experiments to prove that mainstream models might not be as accurate as they claim. One of those people was Nikola Tesla, who did not subscribe to relativity. He didn't subscribe to Einstein or Edison's perspectives. Now, who invented most of what we use today? Tesla. Yet, when you ask a common teacher who invented electricity or who invented a light bulb, they'll say Edison. They name streets after the con man. They don't teach Tesla. They don't teach Walter Russell. They don't teach the alternative perspectives. So it's just very unfortunate. And unless you take it upon yourself to seek the information out and experiment for yourself, you're not probably only hear about it from word of mouth or a wonderful show like this. So
It reminds me of the movie The Island, where they got all these clones in this massive facility, and they just they educate them to the level of a 15-year-old. They don't imprint them with an awareness of sex or anything like that. They discourage them every time they question things that are going on and what have you, just so that they can keep them going along and use them as products to replace the organs of incredibly wealthy, rich people. A very cool film.
You talk about North Korea?
Yeah, pretty much. And the whole storyline, I feel, of history is very much similar to that storyline in the film The Island, is that essentially you're told this collective story so that people will be satisfied with that collective story and not question that there might be perhaps other things available to it, so that you can be corralled more easily, so that you can be used in order to support they lie in it of itself. And that's what our society really has become, a lie built upon a lie built upon a lie that people accept, and upon that acceptance is built a new society, a society full of liars, cheats, thieves, sociopaths, scumbags, crazy people, that kind of thing. Voila! And,
the truth only hurts if you live a lie. You know, the proof is in the pudding. Nobody's going to spoon-feed it to you. As Nikola Tesla said, today's scientists substitute math for experiments, and they wander off through equation after equation until they build a structure which has no relation to reality. And that's exactly what quantum mechanics is doing today. They're taking a bunch of ad hoc assumptions and theories and mathematics. It's not mathematics, it's mathematics, talking about dynamics and stuff that just doesn't jive with nature. And then they base these rules on it only on this little level. Their rules don't apply on the big level, only on what you can't measure and you can't see. But how convenient it is for these billion-dollar scientists to be able to write the laws and the rules for that, even though nobody can see it and nobody has ever substantiated it.
Are we talking about the Vatican here or scientists?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same difference, isn't it?
Well,
also that's my other contention.
Yeah, filtered through the church. The creator of the Big Bang theory was a Catholic priest, George Lemaitre, and all the information had to be filtered through their eyes. And if it doesn't jive with their perspectives, then they're just going to say it ain't so and burn you at the stake, like they did with Giordano Bruno. And
I don't know who Giordano Bruno is.
He is a was. He lived in the 14 or 1500s, and he was saying that there's life on other worlds, and that the we aren't the center of the solar system, or we aren't the center of the universe, and that our that Mary wasn't a virgin, and a whole bunch of blasphemous things. So they didn't take too kindly to that back then, and they burnt him at the stake. Now, this guy was doing drawings of the flower of life and doing geometric works, and he figured out some, I don't even know how to describe it, like this artwork in relation to the vowels, which relate to harmonics and music. Really brilliant stuff, but you're not going to learn about that in a school, you know? They also teach, you know, from Galileo's theory. Galileo was almost killed. He's in prison for his ideas. And when he dropped the two things off the building, they'd fall at the same time. Well, there's a guy named Boyd Bushman. And what he did is he forced together two magnets that want to repel, really strong magnets. He went to the top of a building and dropped those magnets off the building along with a regular object. The magnets fell slower. What? If gravity is dependent upon density, then why wouldn't they fall at the same time? Like the normal laws. But no, when you have two magnets forced together that want to repel, they fall slower. So did Galileo have magnets to force together at the time that he was doing his experiments? No. We do today, and we could come to some different conclusions and add to those wonderful theories that these people had developed long ago. We could refine them using the tools that we have today and incorporate different ideas rather than be stuck in the same models and hoisting people onto infallible pedestals. And anybody who says differently is considered a crackpot or a pseudoscience. I don't believe in pseudoscience. I believe in pseudo-skeptics who refuse to acknowledge the valid work of other people, and then they label something pseudoscience. No.
Mm. Yeah, there's an interesting case here in New Zealand. It's kind of a little off topic, but it's very similar to the mentality. A policeman who was convicted, who was a convicted criminal, who was he convicted of? Planting evidence on somebody, right? Mm-hmm. And they had a funeral for that cop a couple of days ago. And part of his obituary was, his credibility is completely beyond reproach. So you're saying the credibility of a convicted criminal who was a cop who planted evidence on people is beyond reproach. And that's entirely similar to how I feel the scientific community works as well. Hey, we've got all this evidence that you're liars, cheats, thieves, scumbags, and what have you. But, hey, beyond reproach.
Jesus. You know, there's just a different way of looking at things in the world. And most people look at things through the filter of a church or through the filter of an accepted physics book. But if you look at these brilliant people's experiments, you might see something different. And if you experiment for yourself, you might see something different. That's pretty much what it's about. Not to subscribe to somebody else's theory, but to use their information to help you with your experiments. And if you don't experiment, you're not going to find the conclusions for yourself. You're given all the answers in a classroom as if all of the universe has already been surmised and summed up in a physics book. What motivation is there for a kid to go out in the world to try to discover something since it's already all been discovered in the book, right? Right, just fall in line and... No, there's so much to discover and so much to do that people are not paying attention with, like the magnets in the water and the coded magnets that structurize this and that. You got these technologies and the perspectives and books beyond volumes and volumes of books that people don't know about. One thing I'd like to mention, I took a picture yesterday of just 20 of John Searle's books. There's 40 other books that I couldn't fit on the table And then there's more books and boxes that the man has written. Books. This guy's written like 100 books. Just that sheer volume of material alone, people should be studying and giving acknowledgement to. But no, nobody knows he's written that.
Can't really read anymore either.
He can't. It's so much material. Some of the books are like 400 pages, and they're typed in 8 font.
Oh,
like there, it's a serious amount of material. John Searle wrote 3 books last year, and he's already writing another book this year. It won't stop. Can't stop. Won't stop.
Well, and here's another thing that I found very interesting. People think that science is finite, like it's an authority. Now, you ask that person the question, do scientific experiments still go on today? Are people still experimenting with scientific principles and stuff? And like, well, yes, of course. Okay. Therefore, science is not settled, science is not solid, because experiments are still going on in order to figure out new stuff. Okay? It's not a solid frickin' world. It's a belief structure. Anybody, it's like atheism, essentially. I believe there's no God, therefore there's no God. I can't prove that there's no God because you can't prove a negative or whatever. And it doesn't matter either or, because I feel comfortable with that fact and I will keep believing it all along the times anyway. And then you have a look at other things along that same atheist strand, which I found particularly interesting coming out of Vietnam POW camps, is that the veterans that were in those camps who had a very strong belief in God, you know, stuff like that, they had a much, much higher survival rate than those who had no faith of any kind. Because when those people were locked away in that room alone, they felt truly alone.
Hmm.
And that's something that science is really being corrupted by, I think, is they think that science is about facts, and it should be, in principle, but it's not. It's just another religion at this particular point in time.
Yeah, originally meant to know, and it's not to figure out facts and to disprove this and that. It's to know, and it's your own personal journey in that. And to share that with others, not to try to disprove others, because everybody has a different perspective. We all collect different information. We can work together to get this stuff out to people and at least teach new kids and show them the alternative perspective so that they can choose to pursue it if they want and compare it to these old
ones. We'll be right back, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow like this?
Like this,
let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this?
Welcome back.
I don't know anybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Jason Verbelli. We like to keep it gangster, you know, in the Rockefeller sense of the word.
Yeah.
Hey, you were just showing us around the lab before over the break and stuff, and you've got like these big, what was that, like a 100-ton press or something? What was it?
Yep, that's exactly what it was. That's a press. That's what we're going to be using to make our own magnets.
Hey, it might be cool for the video, actually, if you pick up the computer and show us around the lab.
Now I have the wire attached to it, and I can't get back over there. I'm sorry.
Oh, dang. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I do have pictures on in that presentation that I just did last Sunday. There's a couple slides. I included pictures of the lab that I now am a part of here at Searle Magnetics, and it shows some of the equipment that we're using and what it takes to rebuild this SEG and his technology. So it's just, there's just a lot involved. That's like a series. That's another 2-hour show. We can just talk about John Searle's technology, and I'd like to be able to come back on sometime and have people call in and ask me some questions, some tough questions, and see if we can get them answered. Because there's a lot of misconceptions out there about his history and about his technology. So part of the reason why I'm working so hard is to clear up those misconceptions so that we can move forward and study this in a professional and realistic way.
Have you noticed that the methodology for discrediting scientists, calling them names and so on and so forth, the methods haven't changed, you know? Somebody comes up with a great discovery or amazing facts or whatever. Oh, he's going to destroy the Earth with it. Oh, he'll set the sky on fire. Oh, he'll do this, that, or the other. And today it's the same thing, except you just get called a conspiracy theorist and a nut job first before you get accused of being dangerous.
Yeah, it's a logical fallacy. It's called derision. And it's pretty much just it's trying to clown other people and say it ain't so. That's what I call science, but in a different way. P-S-Y-E-N-C-E. Science versus science. This one is just messing with your mind. This one is just talking about outdated models refusing to acknowledge the rules of nature. So there's a whole slew of topics and peer-reviewed data and all these experiments that people just don't know about and don't look at. And they say, no, I don't want to taint my mind with that material because I already know these models are great. So there's no reason why we should even give consideration to those perspectives. Like, well, that's just being
pseudo-skeptic. We've got too freaking comfortable, haven't we? Yeah. I don't know about you, but I love it when people tell me that I'm wrong because it means I can learn something for a change.
Exactly. That's the big difference between a lot of people. People will defend what they first encounter, even if that thing they first encounter is wrong. Because it's the first thing that that came to you, so you're going to adopt it and you're going to defend it violently until somebody proves that incorrect. And then you'll be more likely to lean towards what makes sense. But the first thing that you encounter is more likely to make sense to you. And then you're going to adopt that and shun other things. Well, so a lot of people do. I'm like you. I don't mind being told I'm wrong. That means, wow, there's more to study. And there's more that we can be doing to try to get this information out. Because I'm still paying electric bills in my house. I'm still paying for the gas and all that, and I don't like it. So I'd like to learn of different ideas because what I'm doing is wrong. You can't say, oh, I'm happy in my life. I'm paying my bills, and that's what's right. No. I don't feel free to the point where I could. Freedom to me is being able to travel at any time to any place in the world without having to check in with your government or have to have a passport or pay import-export taxes. Fly there, fly back, your business, that's that. Freedom to me is being able to live without having to pay for food or water, unless you want to try somebody else's food. But you shouldn't have to be dependent upon the system that we use today, and that all derives from lack of energy. And if we can provide people a more efficient way of producing energy, an independent way of producing energy, then I think that will knock the chain and a reaction would take place in society that it'll change the structure that we live in. But some people say you have to change that structure first in order for these things to come out. No, I say it's the opposite. If we want to change the structure of society, we have to get these things out first. And when you use it and you live by example and you're showing your neighbors that you're independent, they're going to want to lean towards your methods. They're going to want to know how you're living so happily and so freely, naturally. So
unless it's difficult, in which case they go, oh, well, you know, I could be a million. I could be a millionaire, but it would mean that I'd have to work 70 hours a week for like 10 years or something like that and risk everything in my life. Maybe it's just not worth it. I'll just be broke-ass mofo, pay the bills that are consistently rising, and look after my kids in a very subjugated fashion by giving them to the public education system to brainwash and indoctrinate and then report on what guns daddy has in the house.
Yeah, that's I'd call that the Edison complex. Because what did Edison say? He said, an invention, it takes 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. But Tesla was the other way around. He was 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration. And Tesla, I think, had a quote that said, if Tesla was Tesla had a quote about Edison, and he said, if Edison were to try to find a needle in a haystack, he'd sort through every piece of straw until he found the one he wants or something. Instead of taking your time to think, go over in your head, and then all you need to do is one action, boom, there you go. Edison is testing, wasting money, wasting time, doing all these things, trial and error, and then he might get it right. Tesla would think, sit, meditate, go through everything in his head. And the first time he did something, he built it and it worked. Every time. 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration. So the Edison complex, when people say, you have to work hard. No, you have to work smart. You don't need to work as hard in the world that we live in today to maintain the status quo. So my whole motto about this stuff is, we spend billions on all this oil, gas, nuclear, war, company bailouts, and we pay for what we want in life. You pay for what you want, and we're paying for the wrong stuff. So if we would like to see these alternative methods come out, we would have to fund these other people. So let me get this straight. There's a guy on YouTube, he says, why do we waste all our resources funding this free energy BS? So what do you mean research? No, but first of all, it's not being funded. So let me get this straight. NASA is getting billions. CERN is getting billions. The Cancer Society and American Medical Association collect millions every year. They haven't cured cancer yet. How long have they been collecting donations for? Let me get this straight. Billions are spent on war. Billions are spent on company bailouts. Billions are spent on cleaning up oil spills. And, there's got to be a better way here. And, oh, yeah, it costs millions of dollars to send a rocket to destroy somebody's town in another country. So why don't we just hold off on one rocket and give that money to people like John Searle or Marco Rodin or John Bedini, or people who can study Stan Meyer's water car, like Russ Grease. Give that money to people like Josh Toms so that he can fund his million volt march. There's a lot of other things we can be doing. So we're not wasting resources funding free energy BS. First of all, it's not BS. Secondly, we're not funding it. And thirdly, what we are funding is the BS.
Yep, that sounds about the right perspective. That's just how the world works. People have no idea what's going on, and they say that, well, the people who are solving the problems are the problems, and the people who are causing the problems are the solution. You can't make this stuff up, man.
So that's just the dichotomy of society. The people who really, really want to help out can't afford to. And the people who can afford to really don't want to help out because they're making too much money in their current ways. Why ruin a good thing if you're already making millions of dollars? Why would you risk your credibility, your job, and stock options to pursue something that isn't unknown?
Yeah.
Why would you spend money on research and development? Because it's better. It's better than your wars. Because it's more productive. It's natural. Come on. Give and take. not just take, 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 give and take. So now there's a charity. It's called NorthPointCharity.org. And it's a 501c3. It's a nonprofit, IRS and SEC compliant. Everything's legal. So this charity differs from all others because this one is specific to set up for free energy technologies and John Searle's project and projects like it. So if companies have to donate, large companies have to donate to charities at the end of a tax year or at the end of a quarterly earning. Why? Because it will lower their tax bracket. They have to donate. And they have lists of charities that they just give all this money to at the end of the year. So why not just add NorthPointCharity.org to their list of charities? And the irony is the very companies who are preventing this technology from coming out would help to fund it. They don't have to lift a finger. All they got to do is put this on their list of charities that they already have. At the end of the year, money goes to the charities. Now here's a charity for these specific projects. Public doesn't know about it, really. It's only been around since March 3rd of 2012. Been trying to tell people about it. So it's up to us to try to fund these things, if you so choose, or at least tell people who you think can fund it. Get them to learn about it. Talk to us. Contact SearleMagnetics.com. Look at the information on SearleSolution.com and see what we can do together. It's just a matter of getting off our butt, funding the research and development, and getting these people what they need.
Mm. Well, that's true. And the other perspective is crowdsourcing. You've heard of this, and some people have used crowdsourcing to a mass effect. And it occurs to me that we're going to be trying to either trick the current establishment into funding things that will basically lead to their demise and a better future for everybody, but not for them. Not entirely in a dissimilar fashion. It's more or less the opposite of what's happening now at the moment, is the corporations are tricking the people into buying products that destroy themselves. So it'd be very interesting to trick the corporations into funding projects that destroy themselves and instead wind up with a better world at the end of it. And the other element is as well, just telling the truth and getting people who are well-informed and absolutely on the ball, who have a spare $5, to all contribute just a little something. Because, you know, if you had a million people who gave $5 or whatever, and by today's internet standards, that ain't that difficult. It's certainly not impossible. Mate, you could fund a free energy device through to the point where it could actually be marketed, processed, and get out to people. You know, these are the simple steps that we can take, even if it's step by step, day by day, getting these different products online and out there for general consumption. This is how we would really reshape and revitalize the economy, not carbon taxing everybody.
Yeah. Now, you gotta give consideration to the hungriest people in the world. You know, they really don't care how your machine works. All they care about is it can power your house, can it help us eat, can it give us some electricity? Great. Care how it works. They're not trying to disprove, oh, it can't. It can't work because it violates this law. It can't. No. They're hungry. They want this. They need this. So rather than trying to quibble and fight amongst yourselves, why don't you try to figure this stuff out rather than saying it ain't so and apply it to the people who really need it? Because they really want it, and they don't have the means to get it. And should just keep that in the back of our minds. There are people who really want it and don't care how it works, just as long as we get it to them.
Yeah, well, and that's not entirely dissimilar from the average consumer as well. And again, you know, it comes from charity. What if the product was created by charity and then distributed by charity too? Wouldn't that make the world go round like a couple of magnets? We'll be right back after the break with Jason Verbelli, ladies and gentlemen.
Got no love.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's our final segment with Jason Verbelli here. And The Real Verbs is his YouTube channel. So it's youtube.com/ The Real Verbs with a Z. Or a Z. As it may be. It used to be The Real Verb Blackwater and then changed it to The Real Verb Z?
No, actually, it's just Verbs, V-E-R-B-Z. But then when... like in 2005 or 2006 when I tried to start a YouTube channel, some imposter had already taken the name, so I had to put The Real Verbs.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, I know, right?
Mm. Right, now, final segment here, and we're definitely going to have you back on for another extended interview because there's a lot to go through. Hundreds of books and things of this nature that you're perusing and taking research that hasn't been touched really in decades, if not a century or whatever, putting it all into perspective for people seems to be like one of the most important jobs like on the planet today, you know? It's like, hey, everybody, I know you've been miseducated and brainwashed for like 100 years, but conveniently, I'm not as miseducated, I'm not as brainwashed, and I'm capable of bringing to you, in a digestible format, the information that was discovered before this mass indoctrination of public schooling and complete domination of all scientific principle happened. So I've got the saying, Jason, in the end, everything comes back to the beginning.
That's similar to what Walter Russell talks about, how light is stillness. Now, all things come from a state of stillness, and all things attempt to return to a state of stillness. Now, stillness is the beginning and the end, and all things will return to it. And in that regard, your motto is correct.
Mm. All things come from stillness, apart from ADHD.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would also like to ask you as well, you've probably learned a lot of very profound lessons, and what I love to do is every now and again, like, if I don't have a really profound realization that changes my perspective on things along a certain time frame, like, I think it's basically I can survive about a month happily without having a profound life-changing experience before I start to get bored with my existence and start to seek out new things to destroy my my current perception of reality with. I was wondering, in what case, like, what was it that really gets your juices flowing to the point where you're thinking, man, everything's really messed up? Like, has there been any points in time where you have almost, you know, lost your sanity, just kind of racking your brain full of this kind of thing, something that's actually really challenged you?
Oh yeah, man. So the sanity was gone long ago, but things just make me very interested, make me open my eyes, and I just see things a little bit differently. The quote from Walter Russell, light does not travel, that was so incredibly profound to me. Ed Leedskalnin's view that electrons don't exist and that they're a fabrication of J.J. Thompson, that's pretty big. In 1997, I went to China, and I stayed in China for a month. While I was in China, I was able to visit the Shaolin Temple. It's a 1,500-year-old temple. These fighting disciples are like the Shaolin monks. And I was able to bond pretty well with a couple of these monks. And they're still my friends today. I lived with one of them for 2 months in Los Angeles. So I've been in contact with them. In November of 2012, I visited London to stay at my instructor's school, the Shaolin Temple, UK. And while I was there, I'm talking to him about John Searle's technology, about this free energy topics, Walter Russell, and all this stuff. And he's sitting there. He's amazed at a lot of the stuff I'm talking about. And he's also amazed that I'm talking to him about it, because he says, what I'm talking about is a high-level Buddhist understanding of nature and of reality. And I'm like, these aren't my ideas. These are ideas that I've learned from these brilliant people. He said, well, those people sound like they knew what they were talking about, and pretty aligned with the Buddha. One really profound thing that that my instructor told me that, if true, could be one of the most important things in existence, which really got me thinking here, is he said, the last thought that you have in life will have a major impact on how you'll reincarnate. And he says there are people who study 30, 40 years and they practice meditation just to practice for their last thought in life, so that when they're in any given state at the moment of death, they can be they can accept and let go and all that stuff. So that idea is that we have to have no attachment. We have to learn to let go of things and to be fulfilled at all moments. And what you think the last moment of your life might have a major impact on how you live the next life. That right there is so unbelievably important. And if true, would mean everything. And if we could learn how to collect ourselves and how to direct and focus our thoughts so that we are always in balance and that we are happy and fulfilled and have no attachment, learn to enjoy things but don't be attached to them. That's one of the most important lessons that I've learned so far in life, is to just be fulfilled and to try to let go and enjoy things as they come and connect with as many people as you can. Share your love with as many people, and show your passion. Try to be real, be truthful, and have your thoughts, your actions, and your voice be the same thing. If there's no contradiction between what you think, what you say, and what you do, you're in a good position in life. And that's something for us all to focus on as we evolve throughout our own journeys in life and beyond. Is to just keep those things in the back of your mind. That's a couple of things that I thought were extremely profound.
Mm-hmm. Well, something that I was thinking about, I think maybe 2 weeks ago, I was thinking about, you know, what would I say in my final minutes of life? And it would actually be relief and a sense of accomplishment to leave this world. That's basically what my perspective was, is, you know what, I've done a lot of things that were really cool. I met a lot of people who were really fun, and I felt like I made a difference, and I can safely and easily leave that behind, and at the same time feel relieved that that particular portion of my existence is over, and that I no longer have to worry about any of the things that existed within my current life. I don't have to worry about the New World Order. I don't have to worry about scumbaggering. I don't have to worry about any of these things. I'm going to die. You know, death is like a release, a relief. But I don't think many people know that. I think we all really healthily fear it, you know, as all animals do. You know, we don't like the idea of being eaten by a shark, for example. I'm sure if I was being eaten by a shark, my last thought wouldn't be, oh, this is so relieving and relaxing.
That's the hard part, Vinny, is to no matter what state that you're in, even if you're in a state of pain, to be thankful for life, to have no attachment, and to have no change of thought. This was the other profound thing that these Shaolin monks told me, Shifu Yanzu and Shifu Yanle, is that there is a difference between nothingness and stillness. And I thought, you know, the stillness meant like, you know, the void, like space. I said, no, the stillness just means no change. You can remain still in your mind, yet your body is breathing, your heart's pounding, and your lungs are moving. But if your mind is in a state where there's no change of your thought, you're in a state of stillness. That is a key. So no matter what is affecting you from the outside, if you can retain a thought and keep one thought pure, unchanging in your mind, even at the moment of death, no matter what, that's when you're going to be released from the cycle of life and death that we experience. I think that's what the Buddhist teaching is, that you're going to go outside of those zones. That's the very, very profound, and if true, the most important thing ever.
Right.
So, you know, why not study it just in case?
Yeah, that's right. Well, Jason, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show, and I'd like to thank you very much and give you a website, a wee bit of a plug here as well. You've got two places where you can find them, ladies and gentlemen, facebook.com/verbelli, V-E-R-B-E-L-L-I, and youtube.com/TheRealVerbs with a Z. Thanks very much, man.
Thank you, guys, and thank you, listeners. Wonderful.
It's been fun. All right. We'll see you again sometime, man. We'll schedule another interview with you just after we get off air here. And, ladies and gentlemen, also wanted to remind people that you can subscribe to the Vinnie Eastwood Show for as little as $1 a month, just to allow us to have a bit of a passive income here so that we can just keep working day in, day out, and not have to freak out every 5 minutes about where the next meal is coming from. So go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, subscribe, donate, and we'll give you some commercial-free archives for it. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again sometime.